we had a panel discussion about the war on drugs in this area, and then we began to talk a little bit about addiction and how it related to some food allergies. And I know that's a small part of the picture, but could you speak a little bit to that?
Yes. Food allergies are very, very common. Gluten sensitivity is also quite common. Perhaps the audience listening audience has heard about celiac disease, where one is extremely allergic to gluten, which causing tremendous problems in the intestines, many other problems. Anyway, it's a spectrum that you can be just a little bit sensitive to gluten, or much more sensitive to gluten, or have full-blown celiac disease. Or you could be allergic or sensitive to many, many other foods. And this is very, very common among the patients that come to see me, and I would imagine in the general population as well. And there are many parallels between full-blown celiac disease and a full-blown addiction, let's say alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the immune system, in terms of the effect of each of the diseases on different organs and organ systems. And, for instance, this is a very interesting fact, that alcohol consumption, is said to be a cause and an effect of increased permeability of the intestines and therefore gluten sensitivity and food allergies.
Hmm. And is that any kind of alcohol? Or beer in general, or wine in general?
Well, if you're a full-blown alcoholic, the problem would be much greater than that amount of alcohol consumption over a period of time would have a tremendous effect at increasing intestinal permeability and therefore causing these food allergies, gluten sensitivity, etc.
So it's the alcohol in the intestines and not the fact that the alcohol was made with wheat, like for beer or something like that.
That's a side issue. The alcohol itself is causing the increased intestinal permeability. But the key thing here is that the alcohol consumption is the cause and the effect of the food allergies. So I slipped that in there. That's the key, that it's not the alcohol that is necessarily just causing the food allergies, but the food allergies are also causing the addiction, the cravings, the alcoholism, the drug addiction, or whatever addiction a person might have.
Mm-hmm. And what is it, just the wheat allergy, or are there other food allergies that also contribute to this?
Oh my goodness, there, you can be allergic to just about any food out there. But the most common, 50% of all of the food allergies that, come to me are gluten or dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very good reason, which I can go into, when you'd like, how the gluten and the casein, which is the protein in dairy, is so much involved with these addictions. It's very, very interesting.
Well, please explain.
Oh, sure. Okay. okay. What's very interesting is in people who have a genetic predisposition to alcoholism, and by the way, they're also genetically predisposed, the same people, to these food allergies, that in these people, that when they break down the gluten, which is a protein molecule, in their intestines, that there are segments of that protein molecule that become peptides. And these peptides are called exorphins. Now, maybe the listening audience has heard about endorphins, which are endogenous opioids. That in other words, when a mother sees their son in great danger, that she'll produce these endogenous opioids, and that can create you know, just tremendous courage, to help their son or daughter or whatever. And, there are also what are called exogenous opioids. And, there are these peptides that are found on the gluten, molecule, protein molecule, that when they're broken down, they're released into the bloodstream. These are called exorphins. And they, for instance, with gluten, they're called gluteomorphins. Now, what does that sound like? Just
morphine.
Hearing the word. Exactly. These exorphins actually make you feel really good. And in the, in a modern society, you know, we eat a lot of comfort foods, and gluten is one of them. All the different wheat products, etc. And in these genetically predisposed people, or I suppose if you are not that genetically predisposed, but you have an alcohol addiction or other addiction, you can then actually become gluten sensitive or full blown celiac disease, and especially gluten sensitivity. And these peptides will travel around in the bloodstream, and they'll make you feel high, and you become addicted to the gluten. But they're highly toxic. That's the catch. These exorphins are highly toxic and can cause, there's a, you know, just hundreds of different kinds of diseases and disorders. It's quite astounding, actually.
Can I take you back? Can I take you back just a minute? What was the difference between the endorphins and the exorphins?
Okay, endorphins are endogenous opioids produced by the body, by the brain.
Okay.
And those are good because, they can make a mother very courageous and save her son's life in an emergency. For instance, they're not that toxic. They can decrease the efficiency of the immune system. But for, you know, for the most part, it's pretty, good for you.
But they're produced by the body, where the exorphin is produced as a byproduct of the gluten?
Yes, breakdown of the gluten. And there's another example of exogenous. Exogenous means outside the body.
Okay.
That's brought in.
Okay.
And so when you break them, when the body breaks down the gluten molecule, you'll form these peptides, which are these exorphins or exogenous opioids. And they, you can get addicted to those, which most people are aware of. These comfort foods are highly addictive, and but they're extremely toxic to the body for, you know, for many, many people. And another example is when the casein protein molecule found in dairy is broken down by these genetically predisposed people, that these peptides also, and they're called caseomorphin, and that sounds like morphine as well. You can get addicted to that, as well. And, but these caseomorphin peptides are extremely toxic to the body.
And, what kind of toxic effects do either of these, morphins have?
Oh, it's just huge. It's just, the range is just amazing. It depends upon where your weak link is. Is it in the brain? So it could cause, it could help cause schizophrenia or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or depression, anxiety, learning disabilities, or very, progressively deteriorating neurological disease, or, the joints, or, the gut, or epilepsy. It just, the list goes on and on and on. It's, If you are allergic to gluten, you become allergic to gluten, you become sensitive to gluten, then the more you eat, foods that have gluten in it, that it'll affect more and more your weak link. And of course there's, you know, many people who are not sensitive to gluten. You know, not everyone that walks into my office with a particular disease do we say, oh my goodness, they have gluten sensitivity, you're going to have to abstain from all gluten foods. No, not everyone, but a lot of people do. And there are very, very good tests to determine this. I, you know, after doing this for so many years, you can kind of have a feel for the person, and you just get the test to confirm it. But this can be a part of the whole addiction picture.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of testing is available for this type of thing?
I certainly would not go to a conventional laboratory for this type of testing. There are laboratories that test for different immunoglobulins and different immune remnants that can detect whether a person is sensitive, and they can do it quantitatively. Is a person very sensitive or just slightly sensitive to a particular food? And there are some panels have maybe 200 different foods, other panels have maybe 75 foods, but they're very, very effective at picking up these sensitivities.
And are these blood, saliva, urine tests? What kind of tests?
These particular tests are blood.
Okay. And so then they could detect if there are, if your body is having an immune reaction to the casomorphins or the exomorphins. Gluteomorphins,
yes.
Rather. Right.
Exactly.
Very interesting. And does Candida play a role in any of this, or that's a totally separate issue?
Well, your immune system is compromised with both the food allergies and with the addiction. And as the immune function is decreased, then the propensity towards different kinds of infections like Candida are possible. Candida is more, according to conventional medicine, which a lot of doctors don't even think exists, but it's obviously it does. I've treated it many, many, many times, and it can cause severe pain, cause cloudiness of thinking, a full range of symptoms, and as you get rid of the candida, these symptoms go away. So it's very obvious it does exist.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other aspects to candida and addiction, and that is that as the body becomes more acidic, Candida can grow much more. As you become more imbalanced in other ways, in Ayurveda, you can become imbalanced in fire, in air, and these can also predispose you or lay the foundation for a Candida infection. And you can collect what is called ama, which is undigested food. It's an Ayurvedic term. And when you eat food that you don't digest well, which means you eat too much, or you eat before the previous meal has been digested, or you eat late at night, you can accumulate this ama, and that can be a factor in the development of candida or many, many other illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Someone once told me that another thing that causes you to not digest well is not chewing enough, but specifically with something like a wheat product, that it's mostly broken down by your saliva, not so much by your digestive fluids. Have you heard anything about that?
From an Ayurvedic standpoint, the digestive ability is multifaceted. It's from the time the food is put into the mouth and the saliva and the chewing, all the way down to the level of the cells. There are metabolic activities, digestive ability, the digestive events going on, and so it's quite sophisticated and complicated, this whole digestive process. And certainly, having an addiction or having a food allergy can make the digestive process compromised at any level, at any point in the process.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of tests can be done to find out if you have candida?
In our particular office, we go by history, family history, and we have not been testing for candida because you can see the clinical picture pretty clearly.
I see.
And so in this particular case, candida, it's not necessary. But we occasionally do send off a little bit of blood, and that can test for 20,000 different kinds of microorganisms. I'm sorry, 20,000 different kinds of toxins and about 600 kinds of microorganisms, including candida. So there are tests available that we use frequently, but candida has its own picture, and you can see pretty clearly, here it is.
I see. Speaking to a dermatologist recently, mentioned to him something about a doctor finding candida through blood samples, and the dermatologist seemed to not agree that you could have yeast in your blood.
I'm so glad you brought this up. This is not a conventional blood test that we use.
Okay.
Conventional blood tests will not be able to pick up candida in the blood. But in this particular test, we're using a computer to examine the blood, test the blood, and compare the blood to the candida signature.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we'll call it. And it's quite accurate. There's many patients who have come to me suspecting Lyme, but the conventional blood test said no, and this test says definitely, very clearly, yes, there is Lyme. And with candida or many, many other kinds of parasitic infections or fungus, other kinds of fungus, it becomes very clear with this test.
And what is this kind of a test called?
It doesn't have a name.
Oh, all right.
There's only one laboratory in the country that provides this test, and fortunately it's not very expensive, but we have found it to be very accurate.
And what state is the lab in? New York State? California?
No, it's not New York State.
Okay.
No.
I was just curious. I was reading a book about Lyme disease, and they said that there's a pretty good test that is a urine test that's in California.
There's many tests I'm not aware of, but we found this to be very accurate.
And another thing that I found looking into candida a little was a person who was talking about using dark field imaging for blood samples to find candida. And is this dark field imaging, or this is something else, or you're not sure if that you were...
No, this is not dark field
microscopy.
But this is far less expensive and very accurate.
Oh, great. Another thing that I had heard is the how much of a connection there is between the wheat allergy and the alcoholism. You didn't mention any specifics, but I heard about a test that was done where 500 people with alcoholism were tested and 499 were tested positive for wheat allergy.
Oh, I don't think that particular study has been replicated and found that it was 99.9% positive for food allergies. It's not that high in most of the studies.
I see.
Most of the studies show, 50%, 60%, 70%, but not that high. But the point is that food allergies are very, very common in the general population. And if you have an addiction, the percentages probably go up.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the research has not been done to confirm this. But we're seeing a picture that if you're genetically predisposed to, let's say, alcoholism or another addiction, then you're probably genetically predisposed to a food allergy, a gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
But the statistics are not available.
What other factors contribute to addiction, just besides the food allergies?
Very good. I'm glad you asked that. Okay, I've already mentioned the pH of the body. If you're very acidic, then in our office we do put a lot of attention on making the pH of the body more balanced, 7.0 instead of very acidic, which is 6.0 or lower. If the body is very toxic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of amo, this undigested food. It's a sticky substance that can clog any of the channels of the body, and there are innumerable channels of the body. If you're, let's say, too much fire in the body, this is an Ayurvedic term, or too much air. In fire, that means you get angry, you get rashes, you get stomach ulcers or gastritis, you tend to see for more diarrhea. That's fire or pitta, and that can predispose you to an addiction. Or if you have too much vata, which is an air quality,
mm-hmm.
You tend to be more anxious and have insomnia and dry skin, constipation and aches and pains.
Mm-hmm.
So in our office, we would need to address these Ayurvedic imbalances. And then, very interesting is a whole syndrome called the reward deficiency syndrome. I'll say that again. The
sure.
reward deficiency syndrome. Now that's not like, oh, you don't get a prize for being the best math student. No. This is an internal reward. And it's actually a biochemical genetic defect of brain chemistry. You're born with it. A classic example would be, this young man who goes to his first party when he's 16, has a beer or two, and he's never felt so good in his life.
Mm.
And then a month later, he goes to another party, has another few beers, and again, he feels incredible compared to how he normally feels, and he's addicted.
Hmm.
That's it. And it's because he has a predisposition called the reward deficiency syndrome. He was born with it. And what it is a block in the brain reward cascade. This has all been worked out.
Mm-hmm.
The brain reward cascade starts with the release of serotonin in the hypothalamus. And then that causes the release of another neurotransmitter in another part of the brain, which causes the release of another neurotransmitter in another part of the brain, on down the line until finally dopamine is released. And it's the dopamine that creates a sense of well-being.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a block in this cascade, you don't have that sense of well-being, and that can cause a whole spectrum of different problems, not just addictions to nicotine or to alcohol or to some drug or prescribed drug, but it can also be addicted to gambling or to sex or to kleptomania, or it can be a learning disability, or it could be depression or other affective disorders, or it can be post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive-compulsive, or attention deficit disorder, autism, Tourette's syndrome. So it's a full spectrum. And it's all based upon the fact that you're not getting the dopamine, you're not having that sense of well-being, and all these other problems result. So if a person comes into my office and they have an addiction, most of them will have the reward deficiency syndrome, and you have to treat that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you go about treating that?
You cannot treat reward deficiency syndrome with a drug. Somebody who's addicted to some substance, it's just not logical to give another drug that you can become addicted to. But the antidepressants, the anti-anxiety agents, they won't work because you just have a block in this cascade. It doesn't address that problem.
Hmm.
But what is extremely effective at treating the reward deficiency syndrome is oral amino acids, intravenous amino acids, auriculotherapy, energy wellness, alpha stim, and then to overlapping the reward deficiency syndrome are the emotional issues and the emotional freedom technique, rather than 40 years of intense psychotherapy, which probably won't do anything, but it's very expensive and time-consuming. The emotional freedom technique is very quick at clearing these subconscious, unconscious issues. And we've had great success with this technique. And actually, energy medicine can be very, very effective at treating the reward deficiency syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the few different things that you rattled off, like the alpha stimulus?
Yes. Alpha stim, the clips that you put on the earlobes in a particular position, and you just sit quietly, and the alpha waves are increased in intensity and amount,
mm-hmm.
and causing tremendous relaxation. It can be quite dramatic. So that's one modality we use. Many of these people with addictions are quite anxious, lacking that sense of well-being, and the alpha stim treatments can be quite effective.
So is that changing sympathetic and parasympathetic modes in the body?
Well, not directly. Once you start increasing alpha, which this is a state of restful alertness,
mm-hmm.
Then yes, the parasympathetic nervous system will be stimulated a little bit more. The parasympathetic nervous system settles you down.
Mm.
So by stimulating the parasympathetic, you would settle down more. And then it lessens the sympathetic arousal. And the sympathetic nervous system creates, you know, hyperarousal so that you can meet some demand. But you don't want that chronically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these alpha stim treatments can be very good for that.
Mm-hmm. Some other things that I wanted to ask you about was the, what part of the world is the Ayurvedic from? That's from India?
I don't really consider it Indian, but most people do. The knowledge is so profound, it's so ancient, it does come from the Vedic tradition, which is way before Hinduism. I consider it more like Himalayan, which is not so much necessarily Indian, but it's definitely Vedic. And this tradition of, it's the oldest system of traditional medicine, natural medicine on Earth. But it's more sophisticated than conventional medicine, modern medicine, in its pathophysiology, in the pathophysiology causing disease,
mm-hmm.
and very sophisticated in detecting the actual causes of illness, be it mental or physical. And so I actually traveled the world for 13 years learning Ayurveda in India, Europe, Philippines, and throughout the United States from great masters of this tradition. And this is one wonderful tool in diagnosing and treating addictions and chronic disease.
Mm-hmm. What do you do in your practice to cure someone who has candida?
We have found energy medicine, along with different herbal and nutritional supplements, that can actually, I have to say, destroy the candida.
Mm-hmm.
You do want to get rid of the candida. And energy medicine using frequencies to shatter the candida, and different supplements to destroy the candida have been extremely effective. But we should also keep in mind that on a subtler level,
mm-hmm.
and I hope that the listening audience will be open to this, but candida is almost always a psychophysiological disorder. In other words, the candida is like a manifestation of not only a physiological imbalance, but also a psychological imbalance. And so one needs to address these psychological issues as well. And those who are listening who have a candida infection will probably concur and agree. So we definitely address the emotional problems, the deeper issues, as well as going after getting rid of the candida directly.
Mm-hmm. And then if you begin to kill the candida that's in the body, is there any kind of toxic reactions that come from the candida die-off?
Yes, very good. Getting rid of any kind of infection, be it fungus infection, and candida is a kind of a fungus. Parasites, bacteria, virus. You could have a die-off, and certain symptoms can actually increase at the beginning. But we found that using Ayurveda, using different kinds of detoxification techniques, and Ayurveda has probably some of the very best ways to detoxify the body, using different kinds of homeopathy, especially French homeopathy, diet therapy, along with the energy medicine to actually destroy the candida, that it can be quite smooth.
Mm-hmm.
You do sometimes get a worsening of symptoms or some new things coming up at the beginning, which is not necessarily bad.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's not that it's scary. We can definitely smooth that out very quickly.
You seem to have a lot of tools available or modalities.
After practicing natural medicines, I've been involved in natural medicine since 1974.
Mm-hmm.
So you're constantly learning, and you're constantly aware that most disorders are physical, mental, emotional, and even spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really become aware of the different levels of treatment. And there are tools, there are modalities used at all levels.
I have another guest in the studio here with me who would like to ask a question of you.
Yes.
Good morning, Dr. Wiederstein. This is Bill Bradbury.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Oh, doing very well.
Good. I wanted you to go back to the reward deficit syndrome, and you said it was a genetic disorder, but my question is it genetic or is it just the fact that children in our society pretty much grow up with the same diets that their parents grew up with, and maybe the diet itself contributes at an early age, and you can't really differentiate between genetic and a diet related from early onset?
No, this is a very good point that you're bringing up, that what is the relationship between this genetic predisposition that you're born with, which is called the reward deficiency syndrome, and diet and food-related sensitivities and allergies. I would imagine there's an overlap, but that's not been worked out scientifically. But in my way of looking at it, you've got this genetic predisposition to attention deficit disorder, to having an addiction problem, to having compulsive problems, where you're not getting enough dopamine, you don't get the sense of well-being. Now, the food allergies, if you already have some of this reward deficiency syndrome, and you're fed, some sort of bread, at an early age, which most kids are, and you are gluten sensitive, well, here you have the reward deficiency syndrome. You don't feel good. And the gluten, or let's say the gluteomorphin that is produced from your own digestion when you eat gluten or bread, makes you feel good, probably makes you feel really good when you have the reward deficiency syndrome. And so the gluteomorphin feeds this up and down roller coaster, which only feeds more and more whatever addiction that you have, because when you're up, you feel great, but that's usually because of the substance or because of the gluten, because it produces the gluteomorphin. Or when you're down, you need some substance to get you up again. So it is definitely one feeds into the other. That's just one example. And the genetic predisposition for the reward deficiency syndrome probably is connected to the genetic predisposition for the food sensitivity, the food allergy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good point that you bring up.
When you were talking about candida and using energy to get rid of it, Do you mean in the way of Reiki or something that's like a frequency generator electronic?
In this particular case, for Candida, we would use both. And we don't use Reiki, actually, but Reiki is very good. We direct energy sessions can address the underlying fertile ground, even on a deeper than emotional level, for the growth and for the Candida getting out of control. And then we can use more devices that deliver frequencies that shatter the Candida.
Mm-hmm.
Both.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, if anyone in the listening audience would like to call in, you can give us a call and ask some questions. So please stand by for a moment.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit. A place where you don't have to make time for free time. Where you can cool down in one of nature's swimming pools. Come meet bugs and birds. You may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The silly you. The adventurous you. The curious you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
We're back here with Dr. Wiedershein speaking to us over the telephone from Woodstock, New York. If you have any questions for the doctor, you'd like to reach me and him here in the station, you can give us a call. The telephone number is area code 315-859-4200. That's 315-859-4200. And if you don't get connected right away, give us a call back. Sometimes the phone system's a little temperamental here. One thing that you had mentioned before we took the break was that there's all these different channels in the body that can get clogged in different ways. So could you speak a little bit about, and I think you were saying that it was the undigested food that clogs many of these systems in the body?
Yes. That's a very important part of Ayurveda, is the whole concept of ama. And ama is a sticky substance that can clog any of the innumerable channels of the body. And there's three different kinds of ama. There's what is called vata ama. Vata is like air and space in the body, and as I mentioned, when there's too much vata or gets disturbed, causes anxiety, insomnia, dry skin, constipation, and aches and pains, most aches and pains. And so when the ama, a particular kind of ama called vata ama, blocks a particular vata channel, then it's almost like you can imagine this wind that is moving along, and it meets a block and causes a little whirlwind. And that whirlpool, we can say, is so much involved in pain at that particular area of the body. Now, let's say a pitta channel, fire channel, mm-hmm. is blocked by ama, in the digestive tract, then this is very common. I see this all the time. It causes acid reflux. The digestive fire that digests the food in the stomach, intestines, that when those channels get blocked, you get the fire, instead of burning up the food, it actually starts to burn the stomach lining or intestinal lining. And there's very easy, quick ways to get rid of that ama, that kind of ama, and to relieve the acid reflux, the heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are kapha channels. Kapha is the earth and water, and when the earth and water channels are blocked, let's say by AMA, you can get cysts or benign tumors or just a lot of weight gain. So AMA needs to be identified and removed from the body.
And so it's identified through these different symptoms, through the pain, through the cysts, or through the acid reflux, these kind of things are the identifiers or something else's?
Ah, good question. Wow. Sounds like you were trained in Ayurveda. Yes, in Ayurveda you take a very, very detailed history, much more detailed than when you go to a conventional doctor, because all the little subtle symptoms mean is tremendously important to the Ayurvedic physician. Usually when you go to a conventional doctor, you spend 5-10 minutes and boom, you get a prescription. In Ayurveda, you can spend an hour just talking about all the symptoms and the history of your problem, because everything is so crucially important. But not only is history important, and in observing directly the particular problem, it's observation of the doctor, it is taking the history, but also there's something called nadi vigyan, which is pulse diagnosis. This is a very ancient, very scientific way to diagnose disorders mentally and physically. The pulse, and usually it's the radial pulse there in the wrist, is a window to the entire physiology. Mm. And there are, a particular Ayurvedic doctor can use actually 7 different layers of the pulse to identify different imbalances at different levels. Most usually just do a 4-layer nadi vigyan analysis. But, oh my goodness, a person, I remember very clearly when I was getting trained in nadi vigyan pulse diagnosis, there were 50 patients and 50 doctors, 2 circles, one inside the other. And every minute a bell would go off and all of the 50 patients would rotate.
Hmm.
So you only had about 1 minute for patients to take their pulse and to talk to them. And I think it was one of the very first patients, after I had some training, that they were in this little, 1 hour, what was it, a 50-minute exercise. And one of the first was a very beautiful young lady, smiling, radiant, looked great. I what possible illness could they have? I took their pulse, and there was a sadaka imbalance that went down to the bottom. And this is characteristic of mental disease. And I said, oh my gosh, do you have some sort of like emotional problem, psychiatric disease? And they said they're manic depressive.
Mm.
So this is just a tiny example. You can tell so many subtleties of imbalances, in the vata, in the air space, in the fire, in the earth and water, and in the ama, and in very subtle levels. Deeper than all of that, very quickly.
And so is this pulse different than just coming from the blood? Is it coming from the lymph system?
What it is is you're actually in the whole bloodstream, in the whole circulatory system, all of the information of the entire physiology, and actually mind is there. Since we're a mind-body combination, there's no doubt about it. And so that information is there. Many people go to an iridologist to diagnose problems, or a reflexologist to diagnose problems. So you can gain information from just about any part of the body. But what's so nice about nadi vigyan pulse diagnosis is that right there on the fingertips, and just at different layers of the pulse, this is a tremendous amount of information. And so it's just very convenient, very easy to access. Other systems of diagnosis can be a little bit complicated or mm-hmm. difficult.
Now, for someone who is has a family history of alcoholism and or has alcoholism themselves, what kind of detoxification, what can they do in a situation like this?
Well, detoxification is one aspect of treatment.
Uh-huh.
Because if all of the toxins are there still in the body, it's going to be difficult to get rid of the cravings. The toxins are perpetuating the cravings on a physiological level. And, of course, you have to treat the emotional issues, because if the anxieties and the fears and the depression and the anger, et cetera, et cetera, are still there deep within you, very lively, that, of course, will set off cravings as well. But so you really need detoxification mentally, emotionally, as well as physiologically. And so at different times in the process of addiction treatment, we use detoxification. If a person who is actively drinking or actively taking a drug is ready for treatment and is willing to let go with our help these different substances that they're using, and we assess them for how ready they are, how motivated they are, we may need to do what is called in-home detoxification, which is an alcohol detox where you go to the hospital and you stay there for 5 days and you go through detox. But many people don't want to do that because their confidentiality is lost. Yeah. It's no longer a secret. Everyone will know, they think, but often, you know, many people will find out. They can do the same conventional detox in their own home or at a hotel. So that's conventional in-home detoxification. That would be the first step. Intravenous amino acids is far better, but more expensive, where you can go through that detox. In other words, you stop your alcohol, you stop your heroin, cocaine, whatever substance it might be, on a particular day, and on that day, you get your first intravenous amino acid infusion, which is like 5 hours long. And we do this frequently at the office. People who've never been able to get rid of their cocaine addiction or whatever addiction it might be, the first few days, it's, you know, it's not like they're feeling great. But on the fourth day, they're feeling better. On the fourth day of the IV infusion, they're feeling better. And by the sixth day, they are feeling really good, not because of their cocaine or heroin or alcohol, but because of these very natural amino acids that are given intravenously. They're also taking them orally. And this balances the brain chemistry so much that they feel really good. It's very natural. And the cravings are usually completely gone. And they're feeling really good. So this IV amino acids can be used for detox. And they may need booster IV infusions, maybe once a month or whatever, depends on the individual. And that would be considered treatment relapse prevention. So amino acids very effectively treat reward deficiency syndrome, reestablish the brain reward cascade. And then panchakarma, which is a very sophisticated form of detox, where you come for about 5 hours a day, getting different massages and heat treatments. You're on a very special diet. You do a home prep for 1 week before you even come to the clinic for panchakarma. You get a very special Ayurvedic enema every day. That panchakarma program has been found in scientific research, published scientific research in peer-reviewed journals, to get rid of fat-soluble toxins, for instance, from the Gulf War syndrome. So there's very few treatments on earth, if any besides panchakarma, that can get rid of these kind of fat-soluble toxins that lodge themselves in the fat cells and very difficult to get out of the body. But panchakarma has been found to be very effective at getting rid of this level of toxicity. But there are many other ways we detoxify the body. The 21-day detox, which is a specific kind of diet, and herbal program, very, very good. People who have never been able to lose weight on this 21-day detox program, they love it. People who have always been constipated their entire life, this diet and herbal program will get rid of their constipation. And there are actually ways to detoxify the body using energy medicine as well. So these are just some of the ways that we detoxify individuals.
Mm-hmm. We have 5 minutes left, and I'd like to open a big can of worms here. Unfortunately, I didn't think of it sooner, but could you talk about sugar in the American diet?
That's very complicated. Very complicated.
Could you talk a little bit to the about the coca ethylene and how the liver processes sugar?
Well, actually, I may not be the expert at that particular issue.
Okay.
Do you want to address that yourself?
Would you like to speak a little bit about it, Bill? Okay. You can just speak about your own experiences with sugar and what you've seen.
Well, some individuals should not have sweets. Other individuals should not have refined sugar. So it's a little bit complicated. Obviously, with candida, you get cravings for sugar because the sugar is feeding the candida. Other kinds of microorganisms love sugar. Cancer loves sugar. And then there's the whole microorganism cancer connection. This is very complicated, and it's so dependent upon the individual. Some people who have a fire imbalance should have sweets. and white sugar probably is not so bad for them. But in general, we usually like more natural forms of sweeteners. And people who are addicted to sugar, there are ways around that, using auriculotherapy, which is microcurrent stimulation of ear acupuncture points, which is very effective at treating, sugar addiction. And, just doing a few points on the ear, sends very powerful messages directly to parts of the brain, and those cravings can be eliminated right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, for most people, it doesn't last, so after a few days, you have to get another treatment, and then weeks down the road, or a month down the road, whatever, you can, get rid of the cravings for the most part. But it's very good because it's very effective immediately. But it depends on the individual. We don't say everyone should stop sugar or sweets, but certainly with people with food allergies, food sensitivities, with addictions, you really have to look at a diet and the intake of sugar very carefully.
Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about the intravenous amino acids, are there certain things in our diets or that aren't in our diets that people could be eating to help to ensure that they don't have that break in the cascade?
No. No, that won't work. Diet is very important on other levels.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the reward deficiency syndrome, you're not going to be able to reestablish the brain reward cascade with diet alone. No way. You have to take oral or even intravenous amino acids to get that level of amino acids to the brain, up to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And diet will never get anywhere near doing that. But diet can be very important on many other levels, as we've already discussed.
Sure. Bill would like to ask you a question.
On that same point, once somebody has the amino acid IV treatments or whatever, can they ever expect to return to a normal level of production of the reward deficit syndrome?
The way I look at it, it's a kickstart. We're kickstarting the balance of the brain, normal brain physiology. And so you don't have to get an IV, once a week for the rest of your life. We're reestablishing the memory of the brain's proper functioning. This is not conventional medicine. This is natural medicine. And so by reestablishing that balance, the body remembers, the cells, the organs remember the proper functioning and can get back to that proper functioning by remembering, but you first have to get them back to that balance using these natural substances.
Well, it's 10 o'clock. Dr. Wiedersheim, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. Is there any website that you have that you'd like to get out there, or any, I don't know, books that you've written, or you'd like to tell people about where your clinic is located?
Well, I'm in Woodstock in Manhattan, and the website is woodstocknaturalmedicine.com. I think I do need to write a book or two, but so much of this knowledge is out there already. So much in different areas. Perhaps a book needs to be written on bringing it all together. But there's so much knowledge already out there in all these different areas, and many more that I haven't discussed. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of diving into it and really learning the connections between these different levels of health and these different modalities to treat these imbalances.
Are there any books that you'd like to recommend to the listening audience?
Well, anyone who's interested in learning a little bit more about Ayurveda, there's a very good introductory book that I can suggest. People can contact me through the website. People interested in the reward deficiency syndrome, or in the connection between attention deficit disorder and addictions, I have some wonderful books on that. And then there's a wonderful book called Dangerous Grains, that would be great for anyone interested in these exorphins produced by the gluten or casein proteins, producing the toxicity on that level and the connection between food sensitivities and addictions. I have a wonderful book on that. And energy medicine, there was a fabulous book that I would suggest if anyone is interested in that particular area.
Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you today.
Yes, I enjoyed it, Pete, and thank you, Bill, for your questions. And anyone else who has questions can contact me through the website.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.